Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. We're going to have a great show for you this week. Jeremy, Gretchen, welcome.
Hello.
Hi there.
So we got a couple of good interviews. We're going to be talking about a video editing software suite that's actually affordable and looks like it's pretty good. Got somebody from their company on, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The title of the software is DaVinci Resolve. And the other thing we have is the Reno Pop Culture Con, which sounds like it turned out to be a really good event. We're looking forward to your review on that. Send us your questions and your comments. As we get to the end of season one here, we're setting up next year to have some more callers and some things like that. And we want to get your topics on the show. Our phone number is 503-766-6264. That's 503-766-6264. Or go on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. We also have a podcast here on the station at theanswerportland.com. We're also now on radio.com. So go to your favorite provider and pick up the podcast. So what's in the news today?
Well, $75 Costco anniversary coupon scam.
All right. So with the internet, there's a lot of these different type of things that go around. And this is one that's actually a lot of people have kind of fallen for. So they've been putting word out not to get scammed by this. It's been circulating around on Facebook and some other social media. And according to Costco's PR department, this is absolutely not true. It's totally a scam. If you sign up, what happens is it takes you to a page where it has you fill out surveys, and then it might have you apply for a credit card or something to get your personal information. And then at the end of it, you're entered into a contest where you might be able to qualify to buy a Costco membership for $75. And of course, now all your information's out there, and it's not even a real deal. So just avoid it. If you want a Costco membership, great place to shop. I do, but make sure you get it from them or somebody official.
And YouTube launches Made for Kids this week?
So YouTube got in a little bit of trouble last summer, and this is a approach that they're using to work through it. And that is that the content that's loaded up to YouTube was not tagged or in any way really flagged whether it was meant for children or not. So It's kind of just out there. The problem is there's rules on broadcast television and radio dealing with how you market to children. And none of this seemed to apply in cyberspace, and it's created some problems because obviously we don't want our kids to be scammed or schemed or anything else. And parents should have control over what's marketed and what's appropriate and that type of thing. So starting this week, there's a new checkbox when you upload a YouTube video. You can still upload it, but you have to define and tell them whether the video is intended for children or not. So this is something that you will see as a little bit of a change. Also, according to YouTube, they're going to be working the bugs out of this. So what they have up now might change a little bit over coming months just to kind of see what works and what doesn't. But at the end of the day, I think this is a really good idea. It's something that we just don't want to see our kids fall victim to anything. So this is one step in the right direction.
Okay, Firefox turns 15 this month.
Well, happy birthday, Firefox. I won't sing it.
Woohoo!
You don't want me to. Yeah, the Firefox browser turns 15 this month, so it's 15 years. It's been around. 2004 is when it was released, and it's gone through a number of versions and a number of different things to get it to where it is today. Great browser. Only reason I don't use it as my primary one is because I've got so much stuff that needs Chrome. But I do recommend it. I think it's a good one, and it always has been, and it's been a good free alternative that actually really works pretty well.
Apparently, there's a YouTube hacking scam.
Yeah, and I'm going to be doing some more research into that. We just got news. In fact, our producer found it this week online, and the basic thing that's going on here is it has to do with cryptocurrency.
Oh,
and
good.
The primary thing that seems to be a problem is a lot of people are posting on YouTube how their accounts work, including screenshots of their accounts and everything like that. And the screenshots seem to contain enough information for the bad guys, the bad actors, to be able to get in there, reassign phone numbers, these type of things, and steal money, which is what their primary thing is. And this actually goes a lot further than that. And like I say, we're going to try to get someone on and get more information on what's actually going on here as soon as we can authenticate everything. But just as a good rule of thumb, don't put your financial information, whether it's cryptocurrency or your bank account or anything else, in a video on YouTube or anywhere else on the internet that can be publicly accessible. And if you do want to do a video that contains information to teach somebody how to invest or do something with cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and all of these different type of things, make sure what's out there is pixelated, it's secured properly, and that you aren't actually inadvertently releasing personal information.
Disney Plus service hits 10 million subscribers in the first day.
So Netflix has competition.
Yep.
And until now, there's been other things out there, but it's been pretty much Netflix and Hulu. And now Disney Plus is entering the arena, and they've been very well received. It launched this week in the United States, Canada, and the Netherlands. It's going to be launching next year in the UK and other countries. But just the first three, they hit 10 million subscribers. And this is really quite something for the service. In fact, it got to a point where Disney's website that was running all this went down, and they were having some technical problems because it was so overloaded. And
well, of course, you got 7,500 movies now in one spot.
Not to mention The Mandalorian was on the day they opened it.
That's true.
Yeah, that would certainly have been part of it. And Jeremy, if you know what services, Disney Plus is a lot of different things now.
It's National Geographic, Disney, there's Marvel. Stuff from Fox, Marvel, and Star Wars.
Yeah. So those are some franchises. I've even heard of a couple of those.
Yeah, a couple.
Anyway, it definitely is something that's out there. It is concerning to Netflix. And one of the things Netflix is doing, which I don't think is going to be terribly well received, is they want to crack down on password sharing. So in other words, if you have people that use Netflix at two different locations, they're going to try to disallow that so that each person would have to buy their own account. And it's designed to raise their subscriber base. But I think is also something that is just not something people are going to like.
Well, yeah, we're going to get a lot of people who don't want to pay for cable. They also don't want to pay for 9 different sharing services.
Yeah. And that's really where it is. And on this topic, too, is where that's going. We're starting to see some consolidation there. And we talked about the PlayStation View shutting down in January. So some of the other services are taking their place. But it is going to be interesting to see if they actually can run it where each one is individual, that you buy what you want, which would give a lot of flexibility, but probably cost a little more in the end, or if some of this will combine back down later. So I hear you guys have found a new television show.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's called The Mandalorian.
Okay. So for anybody that doesn't know, give me a quick explanation. What is a Mandalorian?
Mandalorian is an armored bounty hunter in Star Wars. Actually, they're a race of soldiers and mercenaries.
And it's a whole planet, Mandalore. Yeah.
Okay, so it's part of the Star Wars universe. Is it a cartoon or a live action?
Live action for the first time.
Okay. Oh, yeah, for the TV show, yeah.
And if I have to make a guess, I'm getting the impression you liked it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about it.
There's all kinds of detail. He's in a similar tradition to Boba Fett. He doesn't talk much. He doesn't take off his helmet, and we don't know his real name. So he's just the Mandalorian.
Yeah. So. And I would have to say it's well written, well acted. The people who did the set design and the costuming, really well thought out. It has intrigue, like a mystery that pulls you in. And then there's action.
Right.
So it has the action and the intellectual stuff that totally entertains. So it has everything.
It does.
Now, it sounds really good. Is it a typical gritty Star Wars type thing?
It is kind of a gritty Star Wars thing, yeah. Matter of fact, it has all, like, the old spaghetti Western feel.
Yes, right. I was going to say space Western.
Space Western, yep. And it's just $120 million budget, so it sounds like it'll be pretty good. I'm going to have to pick it up myself here. And I hear some of the talent, and it is absolutely amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
So that sounds good.
Yes.
All right, check it out. Let us know what you think. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about is you just got a Wi-Fi mesh network. And this is something that a lot of listeners ask us about, the difference between that and old Wi-Fi. And tell us what you think about that.
Well, we were having a lot of problems with our TV set doing the shows that we were doing through the internet. They were pixelating a lot. That has stopped. And the other thing is we're having problems with our Arlo working correctly. Now it's working better.
Okay, so Arlo, which is your security camera.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the mesh network idea solved a lot of problems.
Oh, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, the three little pods we have are really, they take up a lot less space, and I think they work a lot better.
Okay, and you can add to those too. So if you needed more capacity, you can actually add on to it. And the one other thing I know that I liked about it is there's an Ethernet port on the pods.
Yes.
And so that makes it really nice, too, if you have something that's hardwired, you know. So
yeah, it works great.
All right, we'll check it out and get feedback on that, too. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We've got a great show for you. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Gee, you have a guest for us.
I do. I have Bob, who is the director of sales operations for Blackmagic Design. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk to, you know, people everywhere with their smartphones. There's more video being shot today than maybe in the history of the world. And you have a program that you sell called DaVinci Resolve. And it's a video editing program that I've just started using. And I do a lot of video editing using Final Cut Pro and Apple's Motion 5. And so I have to, you know, kind of work in one for a while and another one in a while. But your program kind of does all of that in one. Can you tell me a little bit about DaVinci Resolve? And then I want to talk about how somebody with a smartphone wanting to make videos might make good use of your system.
Sure. So DaVinci Resolve is a software that Blackmagic bought DaVinci, which is a company I used to work for. But that was about 10 years ago. But since then, originally Resolve was just mostly a color grading tool, and it's still the highest used color grading tool in the world and used on major motion pictures and television shows and things like that. But over the years, we've evolved the tool to have two different editing pages. There's a cut page, which is designed to do really quick editing and getting short form videos out, much like what you're talking about, you know, shooting with a phone and whatnot. Then there's a full edit page, which does, you know, the editing that people need, the type of editing they need for longer form and for more visual effects. But then we also have Fusion Visual Effects, which is a whole tab designed just for visual effects and 3D compositing and things like that. Then there's the color page, which DaVinci Resolve Color's been known for years for their color tools. And then there's the Fairlight Audio page, which is a full-featured, full studio quality audio editing area. And then we have the delivery page where you can get things out and to all the different YouTubes and Instagram and all that kind of, you know, output formats that people need. And we have some great tools for that. Now, the software itself, there's a free version online that is really full featured. The studio version is the paid version, and the paid version is $299. We own the software. We don't charge for the upgrades. And also that software comes with a lot of our cameras. We have make some really great cameras, and so the software comes packaged with the new Pocket 4K camera and Pocket 6K camera and some of the other cameras. So as a tool, it's designed to be a full post-production tool from soup to nuts, and you know, we've put in some tools that make it easy for people to move over from some of the other NLEs that they've been using in the past, and we also have some good training tools on our site. There's some projects that people can take, can start and learn the software. And then, of course, we work with a lot of the training companies, and they do offer a lot of hands-on training, some of it remote, online, and other in person and things like that. So, but DaVinci Resolve has grown tremendously over these last 10 years. I mean, there were only 200 people worldwide that might have known how to use Resolve 10 years ago, and today it's millions.
You know, we have become a culture that is video crazy. And so I can take the free version of DaVinci Resolve if I use my smartphone to shoot all kinds of video, and I can actually use it for free to actually edit my videos, and it's just missing a couple of features, but I could basically use the free version and the paid version. It really isn't that much. If I was going to do a lot of video editing, I might want to go to that. But so
for sure.
How is this pretty simple to use? It sounds complicated. Like yours.
Well, I mean, it can be complicated, but the basics are pretty straightforward. And as I say, we do have some great tools online to get people through it. Some videos showing people how they're using it, and then also sample projects and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of people that have been editing in a lot of different tool sets over the years, but as long as you're fairly familiar with what you're doing in terms of what a cut is, what dissolves are, things like that, you'll find that it's not that cumbersome to get around. And as I say, we tried to make it so that you could move from one to the other. You know, in setups, there's a way to change the keyboard so it looks like the same setup that a keyboard is used in some of the other editing systems. And also the new cut page is really designed for just some really quick editing. And we implemented that, and people really have taken to that because it's a great way to get started. If you start in the cut page and go with some simple editing there, and then you can move to the other pages as you develop skills. The other thing is it's great for sharing projects. So if somebody's good in audio and they use the the Fairlight page, then you can actually, work in collaboration with these people. So like when you have the studio version, especially if you could have multiple people in the same facility all working on the same project at the same time. So it really does grow from just somebody in their basement trying to get a couple of videos up on YouTube all the way to a full featured, Hollywood blockbuster being done on it.
So this is, there's something for everyone on this. You got it.
Yeah, I was just curious, Bob. You've said you've been working with this for a long time before the companies merged and all of that. Have you seen that the way people are using video has changed a lot in the last 10 years? I mean, what you would have done with a video editing suite 10 years ago versus now, since we're shooting with smartphones and not using the professional cameras as much anymore, does that make a big difference?
Well, it does make a bit. I mean, there's tools to fix a lot of that. But, then there's also been the introduction to a lot of really good quality cameras, not just from Blackmagic, from others, where people are saying, for $1,000, $2,000, I could get a really good quality camera. And so maybe I could step it up. But people start out with whatever they have. But I've noticed that the trend has been to get better equipment in their hands and at younger ages. I mean, we have, customers that are obviously in grammar school and high school and things like that. And the Resolve software, 10 years ago, it was untouchable because it was, $500,000. But we give it away for free now and somehow make it up in volume.
Yeah, and it has changed a lot. Like you said, a few years ago, the only thing you could use your program for was to make a major motion picture. Today, I can take my smartphone and grab the free version and edit myself a really nice little video of my grandkids or whatever and send it to everybody in the family.
Yeah, I mean, content has grown tremendously. Like, for instance, we just came out with a new a device called the A10 Mini, and this is designed to take four inputs, like four, say, HDMI cameras. So any cameras anyone has laying around, that they plug those four cameras in, and then you plug the output of that into your computer. It looks like a webcam, and you can start live streaming for, $295. I mean, it's an amazing little device, but it's giving people more opportunities to put out more content. And it's funny is people talk about YouTube and some of the other online portals that people put up content, but it's not just, people in their basement doing this. It's everybody, including, the networks. The major networks are also putting out content on Facebook and on YouTube and a variety of other ways to get content out, not just, the traditional on your cable TV.
Bob, listen, it sounds absolutely incredible, and we'll check it out. Bob, Blackmagic, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. This is the section of the show where we answer your questions. Send us your questions. We take them a couple of different ways on social media, @OneUserFriendly on Facebook, @OneUserFriendly on Twitter, or the other thing you can do is actually call us at 503 866-6264. And our first question this week is from a caller. And we have a caller. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. I had a question for you. It's about Bluetooth.
Okay.
And so I got a new phone. It's one of the new Samsungs. And I went to tie in several of my older Bluetooth devices, and they're not working on it. I wasn't sure if that's a common problem. I couldn't really find anything when I looked. And then I was wondering if it is common, do you know of any workarounds for it?
Well, it is a common problem. There's actually four different versions of Bluetooth. And if you dig into your device configuration, you'll find that buried in there, it'll tell you what you have. And they're not always backward compatible. So that does depend a little bit on the device. There are some workarounds and there's some things available for that. And what I'll do is go ahead and post some specific links on this on our social media to get you some direct answers on what to do and how to do it. But it is definitely something that you're going to run into. The older versions of Bluetooth are not even necessarily the same frequency as the newer ones. So if the device isn't designed for it, that could be where you're running into a problem. The other thing is security. Original versions of Bluetooth didn't have the same security that the current ones do, and that can be an issue as well. So from those different standpoints, you can run into some problems with this stuff. And like I say, there are workarounds for most of it, but it's not 100%.
So if you don't mind me asking one more question then, is my phone at risk then if I'm using an older device? You said the security was different.
Yeah, it is actually an issue that's been out there. Most Bluetooth communication is used for things like headsets, and while it is possible that on the older version somebody could conceivably hack into it, it's a very narrow communication range, so it's not going to work that far away. Somebody might be able to pick it up, and if they knew what they were doing for a limited time, get to it. But it is definitely a thing that if you can use the newer version of Bluetooth, it's better. And just like anything else with computer technology, it's a situation where they're continuing to increase the encryption and the different things like that. So newer is better. I wouldn't worry too much about the old ones, because the only thing you could do is turn it off. And as long as you're not doing something like a network and it's just your headset or a music device or something, which is what most of that was, you should be okay.
Well, thank you very much for your time. That was great.
You betcha. Thanks for the call. All right, what's our next question?
Can you reset Windows like Android?
So this, I think, is probably asking about a factory reset. And the answer to that is yes, and it actually has a few more options than just the basic reset that's in there. So the way you do this is you get into your control panel, and under settings, there's an option to reset or reinitialize the computer. And one of the options on Windows 10 is a refresh. And what it does, it goes through and reinstalls the operating system, a fresh copy. But there's some options in that so that you can keep your software that's installed or have it remove it, but keep your files and that type of thing. So there's a couple of different ways to do it. The factory reset is the option that removes everything. And the biggest thing on that is just to make sure you're backed up. Unlike Android and iPhone, which automatically back up if you configure to the cloud, Windows doesn't, at least not by a default setting. So any personal files you want to have on there, even if you're telling it to keep it, I would say back up to a flash drive or an external hard drive, just for that safety net. But yes, it can be reset.
Okay, the next question is, what browser do you recommend?
You know, this is a question that we've had on the show in the past, and this changes a little bit based on our time period, with the different technologies and things that are out there. Personally, I primarily use Chrome for everything, but a lot of this is about personal preferences. Today, a lot more than they used to be in the past, most browsers are pretty good. The platform you're on would also dictate this a little bit. If you're on a Windows box, the new Microsoft browser is decent. In my opinion, a lot better than Internet Explorer was. It's called Edge now. There's also a browser called Safari and Opera. Opera runs on the Macintosh. So if you're on that platform, it might be a little bit more native if you prefer that type of an environment. And then the other ones that are out there for the desktop computers are Chrome, like I use, Firefox, which is another one. And there's a few others out there beyond that, but those are the mainstream ones. Where you get into a little more difficulty with this is on your mobile platforms, where there's some different things available, where the mobile device a lot of times will come with a default browser that may or may not be good. And on that one, too, I just tend to install Chrome so everything syncs across the board, and that works well for me. This is User Friendly 2.0. We will be back after the break.
He uses it every day, and he uses it.
Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We're going to have some great episodes coming up for you for this fall. Next week, we are going to be talking a little bit about the SnafuCon, which is in Northern Nevada, an anime convention. But this week, we're talking about the Reno Pop Culture Con. Jeremy, Gretchen, you had a chance to go.
Yeah, this is a new event for this area. They used to have the big Wizard World that would arrive, and that was a big deal for the people in this local area.
Right.
There isn't much to do here as far as anime and pop culture and stuff like that. They have an event in the summertime that's all about arts, but not this kind of stuff where you get to dress up and you know,
geek
out.
Now, it seems like you have two of them back to back. You've got the Pop Culture Con that was this weekend and then the anime coming up next. So tell us a little bit about this event. Like you said, it's a new one. It's new and we haven't been there before either.
They said it was billed, at least by the news people, they said it was a big one.
Right.
And of course, we've been to San Diego.
Yeah,
so that's relative.
I get that. Wasn't really that big, but it was good sized.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people to look at, a lot of vendors, a lot of artists in that range. It was pretty average.
And it was well organized. That was one of the nice things.
Yes.
It was well organized. It was held in the Reno Convention Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is also nice because there's lots of parking there.
And bathroom.
And bathrooms.
Well, yeah, they have the right facilities for it. And that's always been a nice convention center. And I think Comic-Cons are something that we've found that quality is a lot of times better than quantity. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like that's what you ran into. So what are some of the unique things you saw?
Well, there were some vendors that I've never seen before. Some of them were local to Reno and they had some really cool stuff. There was a lady who cast her own pins and coins and patches and things. So that was kind of cool to see. There was a couple of vendors we've seen before and they had some different art this time. So it was kind of neat to see that. And they had some unique panels here at this one.
What are some of the unique panels?
Well, they had a ghost panel about all the hauntings that are in Virginia City and Reno.
Okay. And the funny thing was, is we were not expecting to like this. We were like, oh, we got to waste time until the costume contest happens. What should we do with ourselves? And we're like, oh, let's look at the panels. So we looked at the panels and that was the one that caught our attention. So we sat down, not expecting much. But you know what? The six ladies that were there did a really nice job.
You know,
it was an excellent presentation about all the hauntings that happen, all the stuff we've seen on TV and, you know, what it's really like up there.
Yeah,
it's just been Halloween. So it's apropos from that standpoint. But I know one of the things that I did like about Northern Nevada was Virginia City. So it seems like that's something that would have potential.
And these ladies all believed that Virginia City is probably one of the most haunted cities.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that seemed to rival it or maybe even come in second was something called the Myrtles.
Yeah. And that's in North Carolina, I think.
No, New Orleans.
New Orleans?
Near New Orleans, okay. Just outside.
Yeah.
So that's Louisiana.
Louisiana. All right. Sorry. How was that?
Definitely would be a little bit of a journey there.
The fact that they made all these bricks in Virginia City and they used a lot of the local materials, which had a lot of quartz in it.
Right.
So the bricks all have a lot of quartz in it. And they say that that's a thing that channels some of the energy.
Oh, there's also underground water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all kinds of different things, but Virginia City, they haven't updated that too much. So there's not like they didn't rip down any of the old buildings and build new ones that look like they're old.
Right. So you still have the original. Well, it's a living ghost town very much.
And
it's
a beautiful
area when you get that out there. So, all right. So Virginia City, and then you said they had a costume contest.
Yeah.
So how did that go?
They did a, you could either, when you signed up, you either were competing against other people or not competing. And they had the children in a different division.
Okay.
And they had like 50 some odd entrants.
No. It was more like about 80.
Oh, well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It was
and
cool.
And they let everybody go across the stage. And the funny thing was, I miss you too. Jeremy had a costume problem in the morning, so he decided not to dress out.
Okay.
So I was wandering around with him as Darth Nihilus, and I really missed having you around too, because I'm like, oh, we're my two buddies, you know? And so I did it by myself, which was kind of lonely. They even gave me, I called this girl, she was my guide dog for when we went into the back part of the stage.
Right.
Because, you know, in my Nihilus costume, I only have 50% vision.
Right.
And so she helped out. She was really nice. And after you go across the stage, they gave us little ribbons, participation ribbons. That was cute.
No, that sounds really cool. So now I understand with your costuming, you got to work with a new piece of equipment this time.
Yeah, this was really important. So this is something that Jeremy got for both of us. And with a Nihilus and anything that's like a helmet, you don't always hear each other very
right.
well.
Right.
So Jeremy got, what is it? It's like a speaker
system? It's a portable amplifier. This one's by Winbridge, but it's, you wear a little headset, you put this little battery powered amplifier in a pouch on your belt, and you can talk and people can hear you. It's not like,
right.
So I was able to put this headset on, and it has this little itty bitty mic, and I can bend it. So it was real close to my face, so I could wear my Nihilus gear and not have like some weird thing sticking out. And believe it or not, this thing, I turned it on at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, we were there at 9 o'clock. Gretchen turned it on, and she turned it off when we left the building after the costume contest around 6.
Okay, so it has a long battery life, obviously.
Yeah, we didn't even have to recharge it. I was completely impressed, and I did not turn it off the entire time I was there. And I was not expecting that, because we'd bought a really cruddy one from...
Yeah, I got one for Halloween to see if it was useful, and it was not.
Okay, so but this isn't a radio. It's an amplifier, like a hearing aid, kind of?
Yeah, kind of. It basically has a little computer part with a speaker and amplifier, and you plug a little headset into it, but you can also put in an SD card and it can play music.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
So it's basically like a little portable speaker system, and you charge it. We charge it overnight and it lasted all day.
So are they going to do this event again next year?
They think they are. They've been advertising it with question marks, so I don't know.
Okay, so whatever that may mean. So we'll check it out, and we'll definitely, maybe I'll even be able to get to go down next time. So, but it sounds like it was really cool and worthwhile, and I'm glad you guys were able to cover it. This is User-Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions, your comments, 503-766-6264. Or we can be reached on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook and on Twitter. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week, guys.
Damn.
Yeah, so far.
So, you know, the Reno Pop Culture Con, I think that was interesting. I would almost call that a sleeper. It sounds like a really good show. And I'm looking forward to next year. I'm going to try to make it down and all three of us can check it out. But I'm glad you guys had a good time.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I think they're going to improve with each year.
Right? Absolutely. Because, you know, what they say is practice makes perfect. So, you know, the first year, everybody always has all the weird hiccups or whatever. Next year will be great.
Yep. And the other thing I think is cool, Gretchen, you talked about the amplifier you were using. Do you just flat, is that recommended for anybody that has a mask?
Yeah, I would.
I think I'm going to order one too.
And it was a reasonable price and it worked well. I was really impressed. I was surprised.
How much was it?
All the costuming groups like Rebel Legion and the Mandalorians, mm-hmm. they all recommend you use one.
How much was it?
It was like $26 plus shipping.
Oh, geez. So it wasn't even that expensive. Okay. So that's good. Overall, with cosplay costs, I think that we can work that in to make life easier. So
it doesn't require batteries. You plug it into your outlet overnight and it just charges.
Maybe I'll get converted into a cyborg and just plug it into me.
Oh, yeah.
Ew.
Cute.
And that'll be a topic for later. But another topic we had this week was the DaVinci Resolve and video editing. And it was kind of cool to hear a little bit about the inside of that. And Jeremy, you've been working, I know, with graphic design and editing both stills and video and audio and everything else for a long time now. In fact, you started back with before computers.
Well, yeah, that was graphic design only. But yeah, you editing film and videos in Adobe wasn't too bad. And they've had a couple different versions of their product, so things can only get better.
Now, you still like your Adobe. You still use that, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think that's kind of the go-to when you think about these type of things. And I know for recording our own show, we use an Adobe product, Sound Booth, I think it's called, or something. And Audition's the one we use, and that's what's considered professional. But I don't know. I look at some of these other ones, and certainly for what DaVinci Resolve seems to do, it's worth it. And that's been my one fight with Adobe, is that it can be thousands of dollars to buy everything, you know?
Well, and then you got different versions of things now. You got stuff that you can rent for a month.
Yeah.
But what happens if you can't pay that bill every month?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a, you know,
you get your one-time use fee and you should be able to use it and not connected to the internet.
Yep. And then, you know, for a topic, we should actually talk about that a little bit in the future. And speaking of the future, we're going to be covering the SNAFU anime conference in Reno, Nevada next week. And our reporters are going to be down there. And then next year in season two, we're set up January for a Wizard World. It's going to be kind of cool to see what happens with that. Last year was a little bit weird with that one just because of the weather. It was so lightly attended. So I'm hoping this year they have a better time with it and that you guys don't get stuck and have a 3-day trip back home again.
Yeah, we're going to hire a snow dog team.
And there you are.
And
there you
are.
So anyway, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or the station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.